Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Men in Blazers ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today. Whether it's a midweek game on the continent or a big weekend clash, cash in with your soccer knowledge on Prize Picks, America's number one fantasy sports app. Download the app today. Use code MIB for a first deposit match of up to $100. This episode is sponsored by Audible, the home of storytelling. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalogue. Audible is the destination for thrilling audio entertainment with highly anticipated new releases. I'm currently listening to The Secret Hours by Mick Herron. That's the standalone prequel to the majestic Slow Horses television series. I can't stop listening. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/courage or text courage to 500 500. That's audible.com/courage or text courage to 500 500. You're listening to the Men in Blazers Media Network, suboptimal radio.
The gaffer's just said that he's going to put some beers on the coach in a plane.
From the Men in Blazers studios and the crap part of Bedford, the crap part of West Hollywood, California. It's a Men in Blazers podcast, Rog.
We back like the Boston Celtics. Want to warn you, I am in tender shape. How are you holding up, David?
Well, I just sat on the runway for an hour at LAX waiting to deplane, Rog. But I'm here, I made it, and I'm just ready to go.
I am bringing, full warning, the opposite of what I think in the game is called yo gabba gabba energy to this podcast. But in hard times, difficult times, times of challenge, I do believe that is when true character is defined. And my God, Everton fans praying for true character. Let's do this, Davo. Tell us the big news, a piece really of life-changing global hard news. We normally try and shy away from, you know, global geopolitics, Davo, but this was a piece of news last week that literally thousands of you have sent in to us, begging us to discuss. And, you know, I try and stay away from political issues. I don't want to weigh in, but this one, Davo, this one might just change the DNA of Men in Blazers forever. GFOP at Holly Calamity was the first to bring this to my attention. Thousands of you have followed, but he or she wrote, "Note to anyone listening to the very sexually charged Men in Blazers when they're at work." Davo, take it away.
Rog, having both lost and won an FA Cup final this weekend, this really is the story that's dominated my waking and sleeping thoughts. It's from the Daily Mail, so it must be true, Rog. We should say that first off. The headline reads, "Calling a man bald is sexual harassment." I'm sure you've all seen the news story, dear listener. Tony Finn, a West Yorkshire man, was fired from the British Bung Company, whatever that is.
When I read the article, I was like, what do you think the British Bung Company makes?
Most likely. A West Yorkshire man was fired from the British Bung Company after being called a bald "see you next Tuesday." A legal tribunal said hair loss is more common in men, so bald is sexual harassment, and that commenting on a man's lack of hair is comparable to an employer talking about a female employee's breast. The ruling was made by a panel of three men who bemoan their own lack of hair. Mr. Finn, one claims of unfair dismissal, wrongful dismissal, and sexual harassment.
A lot to unpack there, David. Much of it which we will save for our other podcast today in bald global geopolitics. But I must say, I did like the line further down the story where Mr. Fenn said, "I was less upset by the, quote, Anglo-Saxon language than by the comment on my appearance." He said, when I spoke to my boss about it, he began to call me a stupid old bald C-word and threatened to, quote, deck me. Deck me. Who amongst us hasn't been decked? His boss actually sounds an awful lot like Antonio Conte in my imagination. Here's the question, Davo. Yeah. If we can't talk about baldness anymore on this podcast, have we just lost 93% of our content?
Well, I mean, it's in the pie chart of Men in Blazers content. I mean, baldness is up there. I mean, we had a lot of other things too. You know, the migrant songs of the Eastern Caribbean bird population.
And pie. We still got pie. Ain't pie still allowed, isn't it? I don't know what the story is.
Oh, I don't know. We might need to check with that tribunal.
Can we get a ruling on that? With with three men who are follically challenged and deeply, deeply knee-deep into pie. GFOP at iNorv9, one of many to weigh in on our social media. And this was on Instagram. He or she said, Men in Blazers Human Resources Department must be very busy. Honestly, Dave, I've got to say, this is my reaction to the whole thing. Is that, to be clear, if someone called me a bald Anglo-Saxon curse word...
I'm sure they have.
Yeah, I'd say, Mum, why are you saying that to me? Why, Mum? No, I would puff my chest out and receive that comment, honestly, as a badge of honour.
Oh, by the way, that is such a great tactic. Anytime anybody insults you, young listeners, the best thing you can possibly do is say, oh my God, thank you so much, and take it as a compliment. It really confuses people when you do that. Life advice. It's just life advice.
It's like Dr. Phil's podcast. I love it. That's it. Let's just close the podcast right here.
Yeah,
we're done.
Vendorpunkt. War pig.
I think our job is done for the day. Bald Nation, rise up. You have a mighty, mighty power that lies dormant inside. By the way, I'm just going to say this. Tony Finn, and don't know if you're listening or not, but if you would like to work in a bald first environment.
Yeah.
If I'm allowed to call it that still, I'm not even sure where we stand. A bald first, or let's just say a piff first, if we want a word that is not controversial at all. A piff first, and by piff I mean bald, but I really mean piff. Come to email us at Men in Blazers, and we will hire you. If you work for the BBC, the British Bun Company, then I'm sure we can find you a job at Men in
Tony Blazers. Finn, he could run our human resources department.
Yes. Yes.
He's got great experience. Before we kick things off, Rog, a quick announcement from Men in Blazers HQ. It's about what really is life's most important, least important thing. Socks! That's right, the socks that I spoke of so highly and modelled last week all throughout our live show are now available in our merch store. And it's not just socks. We've got a ton of new Men in Blazers merch available. Roger's wearing some now if you're watching on the YouTube. We're talking crew necks, hoodies, T-shirts, mugs, pint glasses, coffee mugs. It's our Courage collection, Rog.
That's right, Dave. It is with great joy and no little relief that we release this merch out into the world. We get dozens of you emailing us in being like, can we buy a Living the Dream mug that I've been holding up for the past 5 years? We've been a little bit slow, but we've been hard at work designing an entire line of what you would call, I guess, in the trade, magical curiosities with a nod to the history and heritage of Men in Blazers, the phrases and philosophies that have really sustained us during the last 12 years all shine through from the Courage crew neck to the third first Bud of the Day pint glasses, which I believe are our best seller. Soccer, most important, least important thing, I'm wearing that now. And by purchasing any of this, it will allow us to bring in more producers to create more of the content you know and barely tolerate. Tell the people how they can get their hands on these beauties. Dave-o.
Yes, just head to meninblazers.com or check out our social. The link is all over that. Can we get a toast now? And to our merch, Rog, Rogelio.
I want to raise my third first bud of the day to Chelsea women who won magnificent FA Cup final and the double for a record crowd.
The FA Cup final.
Yeah, the only one. The only one. I mean, what other one was there for us to talk about? I only want to talk about the one that was played for a record crowd of 49,094 at Wembley. Women's sports going to the moon. This time, landing Emma Hayes her 11th trophy at the club. She then hailed her team as the best she'd ever coached after they'd outlasted a truly phenomenal Manchester City 3-2, twice taking a lead, twice being pegged back before finding a way to win. Sam Kerr delivering the third goal, her second of the game, despite for her really a quiet match. She is such a bloody winner who finds a way to make massive moments happen. And God, I did love Emma Hayes' quote, hinting at the ability to win despite all the chaos of the transition at Chelsea. She said, "I totally understand. We always want to talk about perfection in football, but having been on the winning side more often than not, let me tell you, it's about human endeavour. And we have a group of people here who are not going to be on the losing team. They will find a way."
I've got the segue of all time here, Rog. Before we begin the rest of our pod, your latest episode of our new podcast, The Women's Game, presented by Paramount Plus, features none other than your interview with the great aforementioned Emma Hayes. Check it out on our pod feed right now. And while we're on the subject of podcasts, European Nights with Rory Smith, the Europa League and Europa Conference League preview drops tomorrow.
The big one.
Okay, Rog, to the football. Starting with the men's lesser FA Cup final, where after regular and extra time ended 0-0, sounds familiar, Liverpool defeated Chelsea on penalties for the second time this season. This time, it was only 6-5 to lift yet another trophy. The scoreline belies the amount of action in this one, Rogers. Each side went close on a number of occasions. Luis Diaz and Andy Robbo each hit the woodwork. Marcus Alonso also had one smash off the goal frame. And the man John Oliver calls the real Freddie Adu, Christian Pulisic, he had some chances, but after neither side could pick the lock, Alisson's save on Mason Mount opened the door for Kostas Tsimikas to send Mendy the wrong way, condemning Chelsea to their third straight FA Cup final defeat. That's a record, Rog. Meanwhile, hate to say it, the quadruple lives on, Roger.
Oh, thank you for coming. Do we have to talk about this game now?
Vendepunkt! Warping!
Do we have to talk about it?
Yeah.
I mean, we'll talk about it because it was absolutely a bit of a banger for the 105th anniversary of the FA Cup. Chelsea, Liverpool 2, electric boogaloo for Liverpool. Slightly angsty in the run-up, running on fumes against Tottenham. "It's not a funeral!" bellowed Klopp. And then his team fought without surrender against Aston Villa. And they needed a win here, really, because there was the prospect, and you could see in his pre-game words, Klopp was trying to think about the worst-case scenario, that the vaunted quadruple season could end up with just one single Carabao Cup, a bit like a man fishing, thinking that he caught a massive one and then fighting the fight of his life to reel it in with every ounce of his energy. Only to discover he'd hooked a rusty old bike off the pond floor. God, that would have been magnificent.
I know, you fantasised about that scenario endlessly.
Yeah, we called it the rusty old bike scenario. I think nuclear physicists called this one the rusty bike scenario. But for Chelsea, also an existential battle, Dave, a season of really traumatic transition, unprecedented behind the scenes. This was the chance to end that season on an up note, winning their first domestic trophy in five seasons and ending a run of five Wembley final losses out of six at a venue which had almost been taken for granted. It was a home away from home victory would be a great way to pivot into the Bowley years. We are still who we believe we are, despite the chaos behind the scenes. Days off cancelled, clear the air talks, tweets, deleted tweets, Christensen removing himself from selection. David, how did you feel? Take us back in time ahead of this one.
I mean, look, what a funny, funny season. I mean, even the highs have not really felt much like highs, winning a Club World Cupity Cup Cup and a UEFA Super Superty Duper Cup. And strange, you know, also add to the list of reasons why it would be nice to go out with a happy ending, you know, saying goodbye to, you know, Rudiger and one assumes, you know, Dave Azpilicueta and maybe a couple of other players. It would be a nice way to end the season. But it's been even for the most, you know, actually, I was going to say even for the staunchest Chelsea fans who I actually don't think are conflicted at all. But I'd say for a number of Chelsea fans who I know, this has been a very conflicted, confusing season. And I think at the very least, we wanted something that didn't end in a penalty shootout. Not another 0-0 draw against Liverpool at Wembley. Not another draw against Liverpool, which is all we've done against them all season. We wanted goals. We wanted to go down fighting. And we sort of did. But oh my God, it was torture.
And that torture began with the great English tradition of booing the national anthem. We'll say Liverpool people proper hate the Queen. Chelsea in the lucky yellow. Havertz out with a knock. Cristiano Pulisic starting alongside Big Rom, who've been experiencing a late season mini spike in form. But your Chelsea started slowly, sloppily. Diaz just charging at Chalobah at every single opportunity. The front three primed to pounce on any Chelsea wobble. And there were many at the outset, David. Chelsea just couldn't live with Liverpool's ferocity, their movement, their telepathy. And Chelsea's press was Maginot-line-esque in comparison. You know, it was a ball from Trent outside of the boot. Oh, so brazenly gorgeous. Brilliant. Yeah. It split the Chelsea defense. Honestly, it made me piss my pants just a little bit.
Yeah, it was so good. I mean, I think that, you know, the more reasonable half of Liverpool fandom would agree that Chelsea probably deserve something out of the Carabao Cup. There are many parts of that game I thought they outplayed Liverpool. In this game, Chelsea were second best for, you know, most of the 90 minutes. There were some periods, there were some chances, but they were second best for most of the game. And from the outset, Liverpool seemed to have intent and Chelsea seemed to have just a little bit of mild panic, particularly at the back.
But once they'd weathered that storm, Chelsea did seem to draw strength from the fact that Liverpool had unloaded the clip in that first 20, 25 minutes, but they were still standing. And for half an hour, the game became psychologically fraught. Liverpool had torn Chelsea asunder. But Chelsea somehow had had the best chances. Pulisic had a half chance. He then set up Alonso with a delicious slip ball, which Alonso blew. You know, God bless Pulisic. Could have scored. You know, in that ruthless Chelsea fight for minutes, ultimately, I think that's how Chelsea fans judge everybody. Could have had a pair of assists. His legacy as a nearly player continues for Chelsea fans. But I've got to say, as a neutral, they do seem to embrace the negative about Christian Pulisic at every single opportunity.
Well, I think as an American neutral, I think that most of the English neutrals, Rog, who follow the game on that side of the pond, and maybe European neutrals or world neutrals who are not American, I think their analysis is fairly similar. Yes, there's a core of, you know, English fans who are always going to have anti-Americanism. There's a core of Chelsea fans who are always going to be way more pro the boy that grew up at Cobham and who they didn't have to pay 80 million for. But I think Christian has got to answer, and I think he has done many times. He's got to answer with his boots, Rog. He's got to answer with his scoring and assisting boots. And yes, he gets so close sometimes. He was so close in this game to both scoring and assisting. But the only way, you know, to the extent that his reputation matters to him, and I'm not quite sure whether really, I think we'd have to really question the extent to which it really does. Winning is the most important thing for pro athletes, and scoring goals and making assists. And that's the only way he's going to really ultimately be professionally satisfied, I would imagine.
You know, you're looking Twitter where drop his name into the search when he's playing. And no matter how much Lukaku is disappearing, and in this game, Mason Mount really had a stinker, truly, madly, deeply. It's Christian. I mean, it's like, get him out of my club. Seen enough. Can't stand him. Get him off. And to have Christian, who put himself out there, he really did actually stand up to try and create. He tried to, you know, enforce himself on the game. To have him be the one catching the flak, singled out, is really remarkable. One English journalist, Matt Law, I think he's in the Daily Telegraph, wrote, Christian Pulisic is good, but Chelsea need him to be better. And his dad should steer clear of Twitter this weekend. My piece from Wembley. It is an absolute thing. I thought he was actually at times the best Chelsea player going forward to watch. But at the same time, many, many, many Chelsea fans believe he's not been the same player since limping off with a hamstring injury in the 2020 FA Cup final.
I mean, what I would say, Rog, which represents certainly the Chelsea fans I know, is that we think he's a player of amazing ability and phenomenal potential who hasn't quite lived up to it yet. And that's okay. And this idea that Mason Mount gets this, like, you know, the English fans are all behind Mason Mount because he's English. Look up Mason Mount on Twitter when he's playing for England or when he's playing for Chelsea from other clubs. They loathe him. Mason Mount gets less respect than almost any other England outfield player, partly because of the club he plays at. And there is a Chelsea thing that comes that is there. But I think Christian is actually loved by a very broad section of Chelsea English fans, certainly the more intelligent of them. And yeah, we desperately want him to score more goals and get more assists. But I think we share that amongst American fans of Chelsea as well. So I think some of this constant search for victimization and search for these things, I think it's overstated. It's overstated on both sides. The middle is always, as it always is within the simulation we live in, Rog, much greyer.
By the way, theological question. When Liverpool could not live with the LeBron James of soccer, what do you think LeBron James was feeling watching it? Oh, the team owned by LeBron James against the LeBron James of soccer. A lot of LeBroning to unpack in that one, David.
Yeah, so conflicted. So conflicted.
He probably wasn't watching, to be honest.
Do you think he's ever seen that clip on Porn Stars? I'm not sure.
Probably. I think he tuned into that show once, but then It wasn't what he thought it would be and never tuned in again. By the way, I would say he didn't know it was happening, the game, but someone on his social media team did post an enormously well-performing tweet in the wake of Liverpool glory. So God bless you, LeBron. You are a fantastic, fantastic football team owner. In fact, you can actually make a case that Liverpool's resurgence has been utterly tied into LeBron's leadership joining the ownership group. But Liverpool had their own problems. Mo Salah limped off injured, reported groin strain, which took some of the stuffing out of Liverpool's energy. Kovacic, who almost was assassinated by Dan James midweek, rose again, started to influence the game. Chelsea worked so hard off the ball to smother Thiago. And into the second half, Liverpool, it was as if they'd gone into the locker room and glimpsed the corpse of Mo at halftime. They just weren't physically, mentally present. A flurry of Chelsea chances. Again, Pulisic at the heart of many of them. Alonso whipped a free kick off the bar. He could have possibly had two goals in this one. Liverpool, so many games in those legs. 60th match of the season, I think. It felt like they had reached the part, the pursuit of the quadruple, Davo, where the quadruple that they've been hunting realised it could turn around and devour the hunter in their weakened state. They really toiled.
But I saw that toiling and I saw that tiredness in both teams, Rog. It was for these teams that play such explosive counter-attacks. Sorry, for Chelsea, more of a counter-attacking game. With Liverpool, they sort of build so quickly from the back, even when they're in the half court. Both teams were moving the ball quite slowly. And, you know, knocks on either side of the ball, the injury to Salah, the, you know, injury to Verge, the Chelsea Kovacic carrying a knock, and N'Golo Kante not fit enough to step to come on at the end. It just was seemed to be injuries all over the place.
Liverpool's best chances were when they were setting up Luis Diaz. What a brilliant footballer he is to watch. Like a less ginger Anthony Gordon, he struck one post and then Robbo somehow, I don't know how, hit the other within the course of like 70 seconds into extra time. Sixth time in history. We got bonus Wembley football. Bit of a snooze. Bigger story of the whole thing was watching Matip replace Big Verge. I have rarely seen Van Dijk subbed. That, to me, is the symbol of just how gassed this Liverpool squad are. Began to believe the biggest winner of this FA Cup final might actually turn out to be Real Madrid. Huh. But into penalty, second man up, Dave, smack the post. Penalty shootout, a game of millimetres, and Dave's bounced out. Thiago's with later.
It was a good penalty, actually.
Yeah.
I'd be happy if I hit the post that hard with a penalty.
Dave, not so happy. Howled in agony and then delivered an epic self-wedgie. I think that's what it's technically known as in football, right?
Yeah, and boxer brief, man.
And it came down to Sadio Mane facing his national team goalkeeper, Mendy. The two had trained together over and over. Who would blink? Mendy down to his left. Really an incredible mental and physical feat.
Yeah, it's pretty much the only penalty I've ever seen him ever save. It was, and situationally, it seemed extraordinary.
Klopp post-game said Liverpool had been working with a company called Neuro 11, one of whom is a neuroscientist who trains them in the mental art of penalty shooting. And that is what was remarkable. He also said Sadio Mane's miss was his responsibility because he said, Mendy knows you, so go the other way that you normally do. And Mendy actually made that guess. Klopp said, I realised I should have shut up. Not for the first time in my life. We've all been there, Jurgen. I honestly think Sadio Mane is just not used to taking penalties where laser beams are not being zapped into his eyes. Then Mason Mount. Didn't you know he was going to miss the way he walked up, Dave? He looked so tired. I mean, he left. I don't know if it was visible to other people, but it seemed like a little brown trail behind him as he limped up to the penalty spot.
Well, at least it wasn't a miss. At least it was a penalty save. It wasn't a miss. But yeah, I think at that point, every player stepping up beyond 5-5 in one of these games, it's terrifying for them.
Oh, God. Alisson, I want to be clear. I am so bloody jealous when I watch that man. Who says you can't have it all? I mean, He's incredible looking.
Good with his feet. Amazing ball stopper. He's good with his head. He scores goals.
A charming, if you ever meet him, a charming, charming man. He's, as I said on another podcast, he's even added the Jordan Pickford parodies in game to his, so he does bants now too. I mean, that save, just springing to his left to parry dismissively with one hand. Oh God, Mason Mount is 6th loss at Wembley in such a young career. And my immediate reaction, I'm not going to lie, was, oh my God, Mason Mount just missed a penalty. Somehow Chelsea fans are going to blame Cristiano Pulisic.
No, I think it's tragic. I actually saw something very different. I just felt for a kid who's grown up his whole life at Chelsea, just the human suffering that he was going through in that moment and for hours and hours and hours and hours after it.
And in this moment, it was Kostas Tsimikas stepping up to finish with the Greek dagger. I believe it's a Xiphos, a double-edged one-handed number, to win the FA Cup. And our mate Danny Higginbottom tweeted, football, truly incredible. When you look at that Liverpool squad, I doubt anybody would have had Kelleher, Tsimikas as the two Cup final heroes, and it is true and it is magnificent. Those scenes of him being carried off the field were just absolutely ecstatic. For Chelsea, the end of the age of Abramovich, an era of excellence, of entitlement, of transformative investment that changed the game forever. In the micro, so harsh to lose both domestic cups to the same team after extra time on penalties, cruel, thinnest of margins, really a symbol of how cutthroat English football is right now. 4 draws against Liverpool on the season. You know, God, they did have the Women's FA Cup, as we discussed, an immense game to lift spirits over the weekend. But really, on the men's side, the quality gap between Liverpool and Chelsea seems clear, David, and the challenges for the new Bowley regime evident.
Yeah, I mean, it's odd because I think Chelsea and Liverpool have drawn every game they've played against each other this season. The 2 cup finals, the 2 league games. But there is a gulf in class. Chelsea are in 3rd place, holding on, barely. But they are so far behind the 2 teams above them in Man City and Liverpool. And you just look at the characters. Think about those great Chelsea teams that won so many trophies. Think about those stars. You think about those big game performers. The reality is that this Chelsea side, as good as they are, and they frankly were good enough a year ago to win the Champions League final, sort of against the head, against Man City. But you just can't compare this squad to the team that had, you know, the Eden Hazards, the Didier Drogbas, the Frank Lampards, the John Terrys, the Ashley Coles, the players who would, the Peter Cechs, the guys who would just come up big again and again and again. And those are the players that Liverpool and Man City both have. Very few players from this team would get in the Liverpool starting 11. And the gulf in quality has truly shown.
And one of the finest, Rudiger, is actually leaving. So before you can even add, you are going to lose a key component. But for Liverpool, the quadruple lives. Liverpool secure the 2nd trophy of the season. Rodgers' dream of a quadruple season that ends only in Carabao glory is sadly, regrettably over. We got all the scenes, all the joy, all the limbs. Lucas Diaz doubling the amount of trophies he's won in England in a tiny amount of time. Really, I think putting an insurmountable gap between him, what he's won in a couple of months, and Seamus Coleman, who's won nothing in 13 Everton seasons. 5th time a team has won the FA Cup and League Cup in the same season. Liverpool become the first to do it twice. Jurgen Klopp, first German manager ever to win the FA Cup. He's now collected the set of domestic trophies. And as he said post-game, the mentality of these players, the pure joy that's in them, this is what sets them apart at the moment. He'll sit tight, wait for the medical reports on the groin of Mo Salah and big Virgil van Dijk's knee. You know, he's increasingly, Davo, increasingly looks and sounds like a messianic leader, Jurgen Klopp. I say that with awe and respect.
Yeah, I mean, look, and that, you know, the born-again Christian that he is, like, understands that form of leadership. Just watching him, you know, before the penalty shootout and all the coaching breaks within the game, I mean, he certainly sort of outleads Thomas Tuchel in terms of personality on the side of the pitch. And that's not easy to do. Tuchel is a guy with a lot himself. But yeah, he almost seems to be leading this team to the end of the season based on the force of his own personality and will, and probably his hugs.
Also realise just how bloody good he looks, David, compared to, let's say, Dortmund Jurgen Klopp And I realised, looking at him, it's all happened in stages. First the hair transplant, then the teeth whitening. You know, we laughed at that. We never mention it anymore. It's just who he is. He's got great teeth, says everyone about you. Then the Lasix. And I'm like, what could possibly be next? I
think he's done some Pilates as well, Rog. He's got that sort of Pilates look about him.
Oh, mate. Jürgen Rog, Pilates, get in there. I've got to tell you, I suspect my money, I put some site credits on Jürgen Klopp having calf implants like Johnny Drama. And then Liverpool will be unstoppable. But Liverpool, honestly, now so used to winning, their players even know what memes blow up and deliver massive social numbers. You got the Hendo shuffle in the changing room with the cup. You got the singing of Virgil van Dijk song to a feigning modesty and embarrassment's Virgil van Dijk. I mean, God, through the roof. Their numbers, and it's delirious and it's joyful and it's wonderful. On to Southampton Tuesday, like that bar mitzvah haiku. Today I am a man, Monday I'm back in sixth grade maths. Today I am an FA Cup final winner, in 3 days I go hassle hunting. New listeners, gotta say this, Americans who don't fully understand the football trophies and their significance and their priority, I'll advantage your knowledge. In order it goes like this: in fourth place, Carabao Cup, in third place, FA Cup, in second place, Premier League title, and the most important cup of all, in the number one slot, obviously, the Florida Cup. But I want to give last word to Jurgen Klopp, because he did say something beautiful ahead of this one when asked if just winning the Carabao would mean the season would be a failure. He said, "The world is not full of winners. The world is full of triers, hopefully. And I try. And sometimes I win with other people together, and I'm happy with that. I'm not always positive. Give me a second and I will find a reason for optimism. But we will try. We cannot do more, and I can enjoy that. If people can't, I can't change that." I love that approach to life, David, that the world is full of triers.
Yeah, well, at least I do feel like Chelsea tried. So I feel like we'll win a... Can we get a trophy for trying, Rog? I'd love that. Don't know
Frank
that they exist.
Frank Lampard in the Everton change room. Let's try!
We tried! It. Another try!
No. He's like, yeah, I've cracked it. Lads, you've got to try. That's what's been missing.
I see. Yeah.
Oh, I've got to say, even I can conjure no conceivable asterisk to comments like that. Godspeed, Jurgen Klopp. You know what feels even better than correctly predicting the outcome of a football game? Winning up to 100 times your cash while doing it. Cash in with your soccer knowledge on Prize Picks, America's number one fantasy sports app. Quick withdrawals, easy gameplay, an enormous selection of players and stat types. That's what makes Prize Picks America's number one fantasy sports app. We love easy gameplay here at Men in Blazers. Just love it. Easy gameplay. Prize Picks offers weekly promotions and special offers for the biggest moments of the sports season. Look, for Everton fans, it's not been the easiest campaign, although it hasn't been the worst either yet. .. But one way to make those Sean Dyche-induced draws more exciting: Prize Picks. Love smashing more on Jordan Pickford saves, less on Michael Keane passes completed, and much, much less on Beto goal contributions. Oh, it allows me to feel good about feeling bad. Download the app today and use code MIB for a first deposit match up to $100. That's promo code MIB. Prize Picks. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy. It's Rog here to tell you about a product that I simply adore. It's been a long time staple in the Bennett refrigerator, Stoke Cold Brew Coffee. Always bold, always smooth. Yes, that is the very same Stoke as in the mighty Wrexham Fortress, known as the Stoke Kairas or the Stoke Racecourse, Wrexham AFC's home. They support it. They support football, which is just one great reason to love this coffee. It is my go-to enjoy during the football calendar, essentially the opposite of Everton. And you can check out their full lineup of 48-ounce cold brew products, something for everybody, from light to dark roast to seasonal favourites in a refrigerated multi-serve format. I tell you this, as someone whose blood type is now officially Stoke Espresso Blend, have the coffee house experience in the comfort of your own home and do it now. Stoke Cold Brew Coffee, and be sure to follow Wrexham AFC. Big love to all at Stoke. Courage.
Just about 24 hours later, after the FA Cup final, Rog, Man City did have a chance to dim those Liverpool title hopes considerably as they travelled to West Ham. A victory would all but seal the Sky Blues' fourth title in 5 years. But David Moyes didn't read the script. West Ham 2, Man City 2. The Irons stormed out to a 2-0 lead thanks to a pair of first-half goals from Jarrod Bowen. But City do what it says on the tin, or at least on their third shirts, and they came thundering back. A Jack Grealish deflected strike. He was up for this one. And Vladimir Soufal's own goal levelled things up. And with the clock winding down, after Craig Dawson brought Gabriel Jesus down in the box, City had a chance to win it from the spot and all but ensure the title. But Riyad Mahrez saw Lucas Fabianski come up with a huge save. And so City are 4 points ahead of Liverpool with a significant but not insurmountable goal difference advantage, having played one more game. Poised.
Yeah, we've got to go back to the major story of the week for Manchester City. Since soiling themselves in Madrid, City made themselves feel a little bit better by opening up a can of whoop-ass on their letters in the Premier League and signing generational goal machine Erling Haaland. And let's talk about his imminent arrival, Dave. You know, the end to a long-running saga that honestly felt like it began before the goal-scoring cube ever even played a game. It's finally come to a conclusion. A $63 million fee. You know, they've triggered the release clause in his Dortmund contract, which City fans love to laugh at. It's less than United pay for Fred. But we'll talk about the financials in a moment because the wages are staggering. But first, we should acknowledge there is a generational emotional connection. Erling's dad was proper City. Alf Erling was born in England a month after Alfie joined the club from Leeds. There's still employees who remember holding baby Haaland. I imagine him just like this swollen, enormous red thing that was almost impossible to hold, and changed his own diapers almost immediately.
With his feet.
But there's something deeply poetic about it, Dave, about football. Yes, it's about money, but it is. There's a generational symmetry. And it's also fascinating timing as City wrap up fourth title in 5 years or so, it seems. And also the six nerd-destroying exit from the Champions League semi-final. What do you make of it? The arrival of a terminator of a finish. Really the first time in Pep's reign that they've gone out and got themselves an elite global generational superstar brand to play. And yes, I know they paid $100 million for Jack Grealish, but that was really just $5 million for Grealish, $95 million for Grealish's calves.
Yeah, bargain. There was a sense of inevitability about it, even though I was smiling when you started talking about it at the top. All the, you know, a number of my Man United supporting friends really believed Haaland was going to go to them like a year ago. I think it's phenomenal, and I can't wait to see him in the Premier League. It's going to dominate so many of our conversations about football next season. I just can't wait to watch him, I believe, go up a level from the Bundesliga to the Premier League and just see how he does. He's going to score bags of goals. He just might not score them quite as easily as he did in Germany.
78 goals in 70 league starts over the past four seasons. It is going to be interesting to see how Pep transforms his game. He is not currently a great passer of the ball. We will see how he beds in and changes. Smart business, say the City fans. But we should also acknowledge the club are paying him a reported approximate $500,000 a week. And to me, that's what's startling about this move. The wages, they stretch the market. They ensure that only Manchester City and the teams, the very few teams who can keep up with them financially, you know, PSG, United, remains to be seen if Chelsea can keep up. And it also sets the market so that teams like Liverpool, their elite players, look at that and say, no, I want that too, which forces teams like Liverpool to make some down the line, some terrible Sophie's choices. But one more fascinating note of interest. Norway has been one of the most outspoken nations on the issue of Qatar and human rights abuses in the region. Their sports pages have not held back on hearing this news about Erling Haaland essentially moving to a sports washing project. The newspaper Josimar wrote that Erling Haaland has publicly emerged as a supporter of human rights. Now he's signed for a club owned by individuals and a regime that couldn't care about very basic human rights. And this we should rejoice for. It's like calling the Qatar World Cup a folk festival, which is a fascinating storyline and one that we will be watching and continuing to cover. But also, One other headline I have to mention, possibly the most Everton headline of all time from the Daily Mail yesterday. This is the headline, Dave. Are you ready for this?
Yeah.
What could have been? Everton rejected the chance to sign Erling Haaland when he was 15 for just £60,000 because they thought the Manchester City-bound star would, quote, lose his effectiveness as he got older.
The most remarkable thing about that story is that they almost managed to negotiate a deal for only £60,000 because, as you often said, like, I'm surprised Everton didn't almost sign him for £100 million. But yeah, that might have been a poor decision in hindsight.
Everton, we are all, quote, going to lose our effectiveness as we get older. I'll just say, you're not helping my mental state right now, Daily Mail. But to the game, Dave, a ridiculous statistic ahead of this one. Man City had blasted 5 or more goals against 11 opponents this season, which is an insanity, which is going to become a problem. But we don't care about that right this second. We felt going into this one, it would be an attacking machine against Moyes' well-drilled defence. And it led to, well, it was that, but on pretty much West Ham's first counters. God bless you, Jared Bowen.
Yeah, just, you know, those two up front, Jared Bowen and Mikel Antonio up front, both so different, both so difficult to contain. You know, so rare to see a team play a good old 4-4-2 and just love it. And on the counter, just fearsome. And Bowen ends up one-on-one on the keeper and rounds him. Puts it in the back of the net. Fantastic goal for the England striker.
First one, no luck. I mean, within minutes, that spirited whippet of a footballer did it again with Antonio there. As City's, you know, injury-battered backline, they couldn't cope with him. I've got to say, Bowen, 35 games, 12 goals, 12 assists. He is going to be incredible at Liverpool next season. But suddenly, West Ham had turned into Real Madrid and City couldn't live with their transcendence. It was a meltdown, even worse than the Manchester logo on Pep Guardiola's sweatshirt. I think City had only conceded 8 times in first halves all season. And Pep on the sideline went full on Dark Knight. He was shell-shocked. He was sitting there grimly. It looked like death by bubbles, which I believe is one of the most painful ways to go, Dave. Worse than being given a Venezuelan throat cut. But in the second half, it only took 4 minutes for City to write their Bitcoin-esque meltdown.
Jack Grealish, Rog, having, some would say, like the game of his Premier League life at Manchester City, you know, latches on to a, you know, to the ball on its way back out of the box, hits a, I would say, a speculative volley, hits it into the ground, and it bounces over Fabianski in the West Ham net 2-1.
Huge goal, because it gave City a handhold and they upped their ferocity, their tempo. And God bless Grealish, season of unexpected goal scorers. Tsimikas Saturday, Grealish Sunday, first Premier League goal for Jack since December, only a second in the league for Manchester City. And the game became one of cat and mouse, a cat fed by the Abu Dhabi Petro State, the mouse, a small mammal owned as a pet by two of London's finest pornographers. And I knew how it was going to go, though. I've seen this movie so many times before, watching Moyes' Everton with a lead. Moyes' teams do not hold out. They sink heroically, but traumatically. And I just knew West Ham had to score to be safe. And they did have their chance. Yeah. Fernandinho falling over. Antonio charging on goal. But he crapped his finish, even as Pep howled on the floor in agony. And then Mahrez flitting in the free kick, killing behind the West Ham defenders. Soufal didn't know who was behind him and so just chose to finish, I'd say, quite brilliantly.
Yeah, I know. It was a fine own goal right up there.
It was an exquisite flick into the corner of his own neck. Soufal proper hates Liverpool is the only logical conclusion. And then, God, it would get worse for West Ham. Would you call Dawson the king of the lazy hack foul from behind?
The only remarkable thing about this is that the ref didn't initially call it and had to rely on VAR. I mean, it was a stone-cold penalty despite Craig Dawson wagging his finger at the ref, which is the dead giveaway, I think, as the commentary team noted.
I've got to say, if EA Sports had a rating for bundling over opponents in the box, they would give that ball denier a 100. But Mahrez, perhaps under the pressure of knowing that if he scored this goal, there would be a really unrecognisable statue of him that actually looks like Aaron Lennon unveiled outside the Etihad. High stakes, and he stepped up to take it. What happened?
Saved. Saved.
Fabianski wrapped it away. It was sent in at a savable height, but my God, you can't beat Liverpool with penalties, Dave. Liverpool own penalties,
yeah,
right?
Do.
And I know you're listening, Pep Guardiola. You should have the Premier League scriptwriters take your penalties because they never miss. Pep then dramatically post-game promised City players would, quote, give their all their lives as they faced Aston Villa. I'm sure Jack Grealish was like, I won't. Stevie G's Aston Villa, sorry, on the final day. Premier League scriptwriters should have all the Emmys, all the Tonys, EGOTs, those mad bastards. City are 4 points clear, a goal difference of +7. Liverpool have that game in hand against Southampton Tuesday. We have a title race still, but just... And it is magnificent.
Yeah. I mean, look, anything can happen before the end of the season. I mean, the Premier League scriptwriters are surely not going to decide this before the final day, Roger. Yeah, I mean, advantage Man City, though, having come back to get the draw.
For West Ham, big love to Mark Noble. After nearly 550 games, 18 years, Mark Noble played his final home game as a West Ham player. 18 years, one club, and I loved his farewell message. I'm a boy who was a childhood West Ham fan and grew up to captain the team and make 550 appearances in a claret and blue shirt. Davo, we're unlikely to see the like of him again.
And you know what? To put in context the unkindness of British journalists towards players, I read one very respected member of the press today analyse Mark Noble's career in a tweet, which basically said, no one managed to get back into a position after being out of position better than Mark Noble. That was the entire sum up of his incredible career for the Irons.
And we are unlikely to see the like of him again.
From the title race to the race for the top four, Tottenham 1, Burnley 0. Massive stakes at both ends of the table left tension to hang over the game like Antonio Conte's artificial bangs over those gorgeous eyebrows. In the end, a VAR-awarded Harry Kane penalty proved to be the difference. Spurs go above Arsenal into fourth, having played one more game. Burnley, meanwhile, slip back into the dreaded relegation zone.
After the delicious bare-bottom spanking dispatched to a humiliated Arsenal, a game that was a throwback to the trauma of a darker time. End of February, Dave, do you remember Spurs had stunned Manchester City 3-2 and then swanned into Turf Moor and been crapped on, insipid in a 1-0 defeat that led to the crescendo of Antonio Conte meltdowns. How things have changed since then. Lucas Moura here thrown in against Burnley's battered Tarkowski-less and me-less backline, replacing a slightly injured Dejan Kulusevski. Burnley set up a Deutschian defensive wall, camping in their own penalty area, daring Spurs to break them down, which is not what Spurs under Conte had designed to do. Let's be honest. They score on the break, but they couldn't do that. Burnley wouldn't come at them. It was like watching someone try and use a can opener to cut a coupon out of a newspaper. Spurs lacked the guile, the creativity. They barely conjured a shot on goal, but an incredible clearance off the line from Collins and across the stadium. Hope turned into frustration until, Davo, the death of the first half. I can tell from your comments we see it slightly differently.
Well, no, I just, I knew it was going to be a handball call the second I saw it, because that's the way it's interpreted in, you know, in the Premier League under our VAR overlords. But I got to tell you, a couple of seasons ago, that never would have been a penalty.
Yeah, it was harsh. Sanchez flicked the ball against the outstretched arm of Ashley Barnes, which, it should be said, was in an unusual position. And Kevin Friend went to the monitor to check with a real sense of drama. David, has a ref, have you ever seen one, go to the pitch side monitor and not reverse their decision?
No, never. But this dramatic pause was something else.
It really was, and we popped up on our Instagram. It wasn't just a dramatic pause for the look at the television, Kevin Friend, but remember, Mike Dean is about to retire. There is a vacuum. We're looking for the equivalent of America's next top Mike Dean.
Yeah, we need performers, Rog, performers, not just people who can make decisions badly.
Kevin Friend, look at it. It's on our Instagram. He gives that sign for the for I've looked at the television. We know you've looked at the television. We just watched you looking at the television, Kevin Friend. And then he paused deliciously for like a three beat before smiling a little bit, and then penalty! And just, he knew the stadium would go mad on his command. He must have felt like Phil Collins just doing the drum fill for In the Air Tonight, just knowing that it was going to give electric feelings to thousands of people.
You make a great point. You know, I hadn't really thought about it like that. Is that they go over to the side of the pitch to look at the monitor. We all know they're over at the side of the pitch looking at the monitor. Then they walk back on. And they not only say, I just looked in the monitor, they actually draw a monitor with their fingers to indicate to us. It's like a charade. And we have to guess, oh, it's a, you just looked at the monitor. It's a TV show. Oh, no, no, what? Oh, you just looked at the monitor. And now what are you going to do? Dramatic pause. Penalty. As though there's any doubt.
The whole thing is farcical because the moment they get in the air, Kev, I think you might want to look
you're
at that one again.
You're not very happy with your decision there, Kev.
Yeah, they're not like, when Kev hears that, he knows he's made a doo-doo. He knows it. They're not like, Kev, I think you're fine. Do you want to go and look at your handiwork? They're like, oh, Kev.
Oh.
Yeah, I think you may want to look at that. So he's walking over and he knows he's failed. He knows he had one.
You can see it in the way they jog. It's like when you watch a dog taking a poop in public and they always look embarrassed that they've got a poop outside like that. As you see the ref running towards the sideline monitor, there is a sense of like, oh, I'm going to get beaten when I get back to Stokely
Park. It's a walk of shame. But the power dynamic changes once they look at the screen. They know the whole world is watching them.
Yes.
And they know that in that moment, they are the one person in the whole world who knows the fate of the game.
I just watched a screen. I'm going to indicate that I watched a screen by drawing my fingers into the shape of a screen. And then I'm going to leave a dramatic pause so you don't know what I'm going to do, but I'm going to do what the VAR overlords told me to
do. I bet you in many, many rights holders would love them to cut to commercial at that moment. When we come back, the most dramatic VAR ceremony yet. And we'll come back. Kevin Friend will just give Eric Dyer a rose. That would be amazing. It'd be amazing.
That'd be so good.
VAR, I've just realised how little we really are exploiting VAR in all the ways.
We've just found a way to put more commercials in football. This is genius.
And Harry Kane snapped the penalty at 1-0 next game.
You know what? Don't give Fox any ideas because they just paid Tom Brady more than Erling Haaland is going to make to play football at Man City, a proven goal scorer. They just gave him $37.5 million a year for 10 years to a man who's never broadcast an NFL game, Rod. So Fox need all the revenue opportunities they can possibly get.
And remember, he doesn't even know what money is. He only spends Bitcoin. So they could.
He bathes in it.
I mean, that's all he cares. What's these things? Dollars. I don't need them. But 37 mil of them will be fine. We'll work out. We'll suffer some way. And I mean, after that, I'm kind of exhausted with this game, to be candid. But my God, Arsenal
just
fans.
Just want to play charades.
Thank you, Arsenal fans, for filling our inbox with the word Spurs, pen merchants. Conte, though, he loves a good pen.
I'd love to be a pen merchant.
Howled and roared at the night. Second half, essentially Nick Pope just swatting aside shot after shot from Heung-Min Son. With Ashley Barnes sizzling Lloris's post in between. With Arsenal fans finding themselves in the odd position of cheering for Burnley, football makes for odd bedfellows in the long term. It didn't come to pass. Spurs cranked up to fourth, and God, it is a fascinating time. There was an article in The Guardian where someone wrote, Spurs, and there's no higher praise, down the end of the season, haven't looked like Spurs. And it's been remarkable watching. We will find out how this one finishes. They play Norwich next weekend. For Mike Jackson and Burnley, two sobering sudden straight defeats. Burnley now go to Aston Villa Thursday night, knowing a loss there would mean it could be Leeds who have the Premier League survival in their own hands on that last day.
Basically, Aston Villa are going to decide the entire end of the season, which is remarkable.
Somehow it feels like Aston Villa have we're almost all done. Aston Villa have 20 games. It's leverage.
We should say, as we pod, it is Mikel Arteta's turn in this romance language game of leapfrog with Antonio Conte. His Arsenal are in Newcastle, Piffcastle, with a chance to retake the pole position for fourth place.
Yeah, and that fourth place dance, huge stakes. One North London aspirant will get Champions League football and circa $122 million next season. The other gets Europa League Thursdays and about $37 million. So the stakes are so much more than just bragging rights. As for Newcastle, their biggest opponents right now, really seem to be themselves. We've got to mention the leaked shirt. Dave O. Newcastle, I don't know if you've seen, have refused to comment after leaked images of the club's new away jersey appear to show a design based on the green and white of Saudi Arabia.
Based on, it's essentially the Saudi Arabian national team kit.
Colours the club have never worn before. Yeah. It's got green trim, it's white, almost exactly like the Saudi Arabian national team. What do you think, Dave? Because I'm sure this is just a complete coincidence.
Oh, it has to be. Yeah. Because what on earth do Newcastle and PIF have to do with the nation state of Saudi Arabia?
Nothing.
It's a coincidence.
I will say, I think we're going to find out that PIF are the team who play in green and white. That's what it was based on. I mean, it must be an unhappy coincidence.
Yeah, they were just big fans of Plymouth Argyle and Saint Etienne, perhaps in their youths, and they like a bit of green and white.
It is genuinely an abhorrent moment. It is a if true. And now, just because it was a leaked jersey and just because Newcastle will not comment, I'm sure there's a chance of some very hasty jersey designs going on in a back office with the temps, with the interns at Newcastle. But my God, that would be almost a mockery of, well, it was a mockery to begin with, but it would be a mockery of the Premier League turning a blind eye to something they should never turn the blind eye to in the first place. Barney Renee tweeted, beheadings? Whatever. Government PR tool? Fine. Repressive laws? Like, I could care less. But when you start to F with the shirt, when you do that, when you change the colours, well, I just can't. There is a line, let me tell you.
If you travel for work, you know to pack two suits, business and swim. You know with your Delta SkyMiles Business Amex card, buying that plane ticket for a business trip can get you closer to medallion status. You know that a meeting in Montana means visiting almost every national park.
Yellowstone? Check.
Because you're the chief excursion officer. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum Business American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Terms apply. Visit go.amex/business. If you travel for work, you know to pack two suits. Business and swim. You know with your Delta SkyMiles Business Amex card, buying that plane ticket for a business trip can get you closer to medallion status. You know that a meeting in Montana means visiting almost every national park.
Yellowstone? Check.
Because you're the chief excursion officer. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum Business American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Terms apply. Visit go.amex/business.
Okay, Rog, now to a series of games that are essentially formalities at this point. Wolverhampton and already relegated Norwich drew 1-1. Aston Villa and Crystal Palace did the same. And championship-bound Watford lost to Brodge 5-1. Look at me now. Jamie Vardy back in the goals in that one, Rog.
Yeah, Jamie Vardy, farewell tour on the lash. She swaggered two goals, scored against Roy Hodgson's corpse of a team. Jamie Vardy, never more lethal than when his wife is being humiliated or when she's self-humiliating in court, dragging the Rooneys in the mud. Genuinely, there's no stopping him. What a character that man has been for Men in Blazers fans. Enjoy every appearance. I think we'll see him less and less on the field next season, probably more in libel court, and with the Rochester Rhinos is one true footballing love.
Okay, now to the relegation zone, Roger, where the bums are squeaky, the tears, are plentiful. We already talked about Burnley's loss, and that meant that Leeds, who played immediately after Burnley on Sunday morning, had a chance to claw their way out of the drop zone. And your mate, Jesse Marsh, only went and did it, Rog. Earned a very valuable, potentially 1-1 draw with Brighton. The Seagulls took the lead with a super smooth Danny Welbs little chip. But in injury time, in dire need of something, Scouse Sledgehammer Joe Gelhardt proved he's as much poet as pugilist, delicately dinking the ball over Lewis Dunk before lifting it up for Pascal Strauch to head home and send Elland Road into delirium.
Yeah, the week began with the leak of 52 inspirational quotes Jesse Marsh delivers to his team. And I do love articles that include lines like, White's winger Jack Harrison revealed his manager recited Indian nationalist leader Gandhi in his team talk before last Sunday's defeat at Arsenal. What quote from Gandhi do you think he went with, David?
I don't know.
It's all Gandhi's fault. Probably, I bet it would be the change you wish to see in the world.
Yeah,
I think he went.
By
the performance, I judge that he went a bit more complex, possibly too complex, to deprive a man of his natural liberty and to deny him the ordinary amenities of life is worse than starving the body. It's the starvation of the soul, the dweller in the body. I think that was that kind of performance. Or maybe it was Gandhi's most famous quote, keep it tight at the back, smash him in the middle of the park, yeah, and nick him one off a corner. Or was that Bruce Arena? I always get Bruce Arena and Gandhi mixed up,
yeah,
don't you?
Yeah, very, very similar. Very, very similar people.
Whatever Jesse said, Leeds appeared not to have listened again. Brighton cut them open at will. The Leeds back line self-combusted. Huge gaps between full-backs and centre-backs. It couldn't hold. And Leeds had an opportunity to slip in Jack Harrison on the break. Couldn't find him. Brighton immediately charged down the field. Bissouma feeding Welbeck, who violated Llorente, allowing Welbeck to pants him brilliantly and chip home. An agony. And David, what do you think of the atmosphere then? Because Leeds were, yes, disorganised, ragged, but the fans, God, they are hard up there in Yorkshire. Started a chant against the board, romantically singing the name of fallen icon Marcelo Bielsa at deafening levels. Everything felt like it was shattering.
Yeah, it's almost not a football crowd or a sports crowd. It's almost like a circus in some ways. But the passion certainly is lifting that club, but probably terrifying them at the same point.
Yeah, and one thing that team have always been is tenacity personified. And at the death, Gelhart is a stunning moment. He skipped, he danced, he flicked his way through the Brighton back line, froze the defender, floated in a ball to Strout to head down an enormous, yes, more than a goal, a handhold of hope and glory. A draw which suddenly felt like a win, Davo. Leeds out the relegation zone, Burnley in. But they've got a game in hand. They've got goal difference. They've got Aston Villa and Newcastle to face. And Jesse Marsh said his team will give everything with just a visit to Brentford ahead of them. Godspeed, Jesse, you beautiful bloke. Or as Gandhi would say, fear has its use, but cowardice has none.
Okay, Rog, here we go. Everton 2, Brentford 3. With a chance to officially touch the shoreline of Premier League safety with a win, your mob sank to the bottom of the ocean like they ate right before hopping in the water. It started well when the fibres on DCL's shirt turned in a Rich Arlison ball to put Everton up 1-0. But the game's real turning point came in the 18th minute when the baby giraffe, Jared Branthwaite, was sent off for denying Ivan Toney an obvious goal-scoring opportunity. Seamus Coleman's own goal then put the visitors level, but a Rich Arlison penalty once again raised hopes, only to see them absolutely crushed when the Bees scored twice within 2 minutes in the second half. Salomon Rondon was then sent off a mere 4 minutes after coming on in what was less a red card and more an allegory for this entire Everton season. Rog, I love you. I still think you'll be safe, but I leave you the floor.
Oh, mate. Can I just tell you, just so you understand the emotional nosedive that I have not yet even begun to recover from. Before this game kicked off, David, I crap you not, I'm not lying. I felt positive. Burnley had lost. Leeds. I actually felt safe enough to feel sorry for Leeds. And I was tuning in, a couple of buds in, to see a point or three, just good vibes. The fans again turning the city skies blue with smoke, a whole stadium, a bear pit, the flares, the passion, the energy.
Fireworks the night before.
And the players, they responded within 10 minutes. A goal, slop, free kick, glanced on the way by Richarlison, and the ball grazed DCL's nipple from a yard out. That's what I do, Peyton Pritchard's nipples. And delirium, his first goal since August. No wonder he was so bloody greedily desperate to claim
mine.
It.
It's mean. Mine, right? Mine.
No shame, you gorgeous bastard. But how we've missed that. I thought in that moment, how we've missed his nippling from close range, David.
Yeah. I mean, he's strong. Top 10.
Top 10 nipples?
Yeah.
Yeah, close, I bet you he didn't nippling. Even flinch. I'll give up a nipple for I'd give my life. I wouldn't give my life. I'd give him a nipple.
He knows how to move it. I love it.
Honestly, in that moment, I'm going to tell you, I turned to my kid, my youngest one, Ozzy, hugged him and laughed. And I said, son, Well, that three of Anthony Gordon, Rich Arlison and DCL, we're going to win the league next season.
Oh, no, you keep on doing it.
I felt so buoyant. I felt so, like, ebullient. Like, we'd looked at the darkness and we had just, we'd escaped in that. It felt amazing. And then 8 minutes later, just a moment of unfathomable, horrific momentum swing.
Yeah.
Talk me through what you saw, because I don't know if I'm an objective an analyst of this.
Well, there is no greater momentum swing than the being 1-0 up and then losing one of your young heroes, I would say probably one of your favourite Everton players. Not everybody's favourite Everton player, Rod.
Top 10 player, nicknamed Baby Giraffe, is how I describe
him. You do love him. You've always been a fan for a while. And yeah, I thought it was a pretty clear red card. That's
well,
my
you're
view.
Kind of you're kind of clipping the highlight a bit like how Fox do when they put goals up on social media without like the build up. They just show you the goal, and you're like, "Hang on, show me the 22 passes before the guy shot, before the Brandt's great red card." Rewind. Seconds before, we're in the Brentford penalty area. We're 1-0 up. Rich Arlison has the ball under control, and Aya just seems to want to undress him, yank his shirt off in the box, Davo. And I say, It's not just Everton fans who were howling for a penalty. If you're an Arsenal fan, every clear penalty not given must be an absolute agony. And by the way, in a relegation battle to be refereed like this, when you know we've just seen a top four battle in North London refereed so punctiliously, and for Everton, all these refereeing apologies that we're number one in the league for receiving refereeing apologies. It's just like that is an agony. But then Brentford rumble down the other end. Jensen pounds the ball upfield towards Ivan Toney. Brantwaite got his baby giraffe legs caught up with Toney, and Red down to 10. An agony, just the sense of injustice, howling, never easy being an Evertonian. We don't do easy. Oh, mate, Brentford stepping up from that moment on. Eriksen, my mate, my hero, for me, the player of the year. We got a beautiful interview with Eriksen running in the next Men in Blazers show. It's humanly enriching, but watching him just run the game with a silky hand, the pressure grew. Off a corner, not cleared. Wiese picked out Ivan Toney at the far post, but the ball cruelly, heartlessly, agonisingly hit Seamus Coleman on the head. Football, you cruel bastard. Seamus, Dave, of all people.
Yeah.
God, you cruel bastard.
Yeah, he bleeds Everton blue. I should say, Rogers, it was definitely a shirt ball, was definitely a penalty, but there are certain players like Rich Arlison, like Diego Costa, who I experienced myself, are never, ever going to get a call.
Yeah, I tweeted that. He's in Luis Suarez ether of the boy who cried wolf at this point. And God, I mean, it just doubled the agony. And I don't know what one level is down humanly from squeaky bum time, but let me tell you, I was living it in that moment. Everton gave us more false hope. Frank, God bless, definitely added more fight to the locker room. Tenacity in the face of adversity. Ball lobbed in the area. Ricky charged between two defenders. One, Sorensen, on a booking, on a yellow card already, tried to clear, whiffed, tried a dark arts quick pull on Ricky, a nipple twist to be more descriptive. Ricky went down. Penalty. How no second yellow, by the way? I don't want to be the person that just goes on about refereeing decisions, but I don't understand that. I've had nobody able to explain that. Ricky scores with confidence. This is all irrelevant, the delirium we felt in that moment, because God, the second half, 45 minutes have never felt longer. Several hours they felt like. Everton had so little possession. Brentford had it all. Everton were valiant. But I knew, Dave, when we gave away a corner, there was a darkness coming.
Yeah, well, it's an Eriksen delivery, you know, expectedly superb.
Elite.
And just dropped it right onto the head of Wiese,
who got in front of Ricky, and from an impossible angle, impossible, an incredible goal, just an agony. I will say, watching that goal, given a choice between that and having a horse come and kick me in the down belows, I'd probably toss a coin. You know what? I'd choose the horse. I would have chosen. I was dry retching. And that was before, within 2 minutes, implosion, Norgard dropped a drone strike onto the head of Henry, unmarked, Gordon shattered. Oh, I couldn't catch up with him. Didn't we almost have it all? And suddenly we were reeling. We tried. We summoned the fist. We are crap at football. We tried. And then Rondon. Davo, Rondon, 86 minutes subbed in, red carded within 220 seconds for, I don't know, I don't want to say it was a two-footed, almost intentional
effort. Left his feet, two-footed.
Two-footed?
I mean, as two-footed, we sometimes call a two-footed challenge as just like when the second foot drags in, but this wasn't ever going to be a one-foot challenge. This was only ever intended to be a two-foot challenge.
The only logical conclusion is that this was Spymaster Rafa Benitez. His sleeper agent is still operating behind enemy lines. Is Solomon Rondon a Venezuelan Philip Jennings? I need to know. What a brain-dead way to kill your own team. Honestly, redefines the term false nine. Just takes that next level. Added a feeling of deep farce to a feeling of fear and torture and chaos. 5 red cards in 11 games under Frank Lampard. That's the flip side of all the fight he's installed at N. Spillman 24. Possibly the only scientific explanation I've heard for the Rondon decision, Davo. He said Rondon made that tackle like a guy who had 200 site credits on Everton to go down.
You know, an interesting season Rondon has had at Everton, Rog. This definitely was a very bizarre way to end it.
Brentford, let's credit them. First win at Goodison since 1946. And all the talk, obviously, will be about Everton. But we do need to credit a B season. First time, I think, since the Championship playoffs began in 1987 that the playoff winners stay up in the Premier League while the two teams automatically promoted ahead of them were relegated. Really a tribute to smart recruitment, deeply intelligent coaching, wobble in the middle, corrected by the arrival of the transcendent arrival of Christian Eriksen, who, as I said, to me has been the joy of the season to behold.
Wow.
And I'll just add, whichever Everton fans abuse the families of Tony and Henry, you are bringing incredible shame to the club.
Yeah.
But Everton sit 2 points clear of Burnley, one above Leeds. They will anticipate needing to win one of their remaining fixtures. And the local papers are calling the Crystal Palace game on Thursday the biggest Everton game in a generation. I feel sickened at the prospect of having to go through this all over again, the 90 minutes of hell. On the NBC post game, all the pundits were like, we'd rather be in Everton's position than Leeds and Burnley. David, how do you, from your neutral position, see all of this?
Look, I think it's going to be very hard for all three of them. Palace are in great form. I think they pose a lot of matchup problems for Everton. It's also an evening game, so they can't let off fireworks in the middle of the night to any effect. I imagine the atmosphere in an evening game, though, is going to be raucous. But I think that game is going to be crucial because I think you've got to imagine that one of Burnley or Leeds will scrap something out in their final games. And I think that final day of the season game against Arsenal isn't going to be easy for Everton. So I think Thursday night's a big one. But just a point. Point seems to be enough, I think.
God, I would say when I heard the NBC pundit say they'd rather be Everton than the other two teams, I was like, they'd rather be us. But the problem is we are us and we hate ourselves. Being an Everton fan is to love something so truly, so deeply, so passionately, even though it only hates you back and gives you scorn. And this is the agony. The Everton fans who went to that game with all that energy, all that passion, all that joy, they went to what they hoped would be a wedding, a coronation, only for really a funeral to break out. It was so hard to experience what they did emotionally in those 90 minutes, to begin with joy and collective pride and have it all torn asunder in horror, to go from euphoria to darkness. Mm. We thought we had our nightmare behind us, that we'd slayed it, and instead, like Sigourney Weaver in Aliens, it just jumped right back out of our stomach. It was inside of us all this time, and the club you are cheering for has been left exposed in its broken state. And I do fear for Sunday, Davo, in a way I think about 2017 Trinidad and Tobago US men's national team night, where the odds are slim that Everton will go down, but every single result suddenly goes against you and the dark, unfathomable thing happens. My Arsenal supporting mate Michael Cohen texted me. He said, "Sadly, you will have to die for us to live. It is written."
I repeat again what I said before your analysis. I still think you're going to be safe, but I wouldn't want to be any of these teams, Rog, right now. None of them. I don't want to be Chelsea either.
What kills me does not make me stronger. That's all I know.
Okay, a quick shout out for a new episode of European Nights, which drops tomorrow ahead of the Europa League final, a game which we'll be talking about on Spotify Live Wednesday. Until then, Rog, can we get a final toast to bring us home?
What a raise this Jägermeister, this bottle of human emotion in a shot glass to German Bundesliga team Stuttgart, managed by American Pellegrino Matarazzo. Oh. They're in the relegation zone with minutes to go in their final game of the season. They needed Hertha Berlin to concede in Dortmund and a goal in their own game. And they got both to stay up miraculously. Their own goal scored in dramatic circumstance, 92nd minute. They scored, survived the relegation zone, only on goal difference, cue scenes, and I don't know how you say limbs in German, but there was a pile of bodies, some players, a lot of them. The 44-year-old manager from Wayne, New Jersey was there, and a red, furry, swollen mascot in the mix. Paradise City, booming out on the PA. It was all magnificent to witness. Matarazzo flies below the radar, but he's carried himself courageously with a real dignity and class. His family sent me the video of their watch party in New Jersey. It was magical to watch in its own way. Proof that in football and in family, boundaries and distance mean absolutely nothing to success, to family, and die Schwaben.
Oh, beautiful, Rog. You can follow us on Twitter at Men in Blazers, at Embassy Davies, at Rog Bennett, on Instagram at Men in Blazers, at Embassy Davies, on Facebook, we're Men in Blazers, on Twitch, twitch.tv/Men in Blazers. We're on YouTube, where you can see a video version of this very podcast, and Snapchat, just search Men in Blazers on both of those. You can always email us at meninblazers@gmail.com. As we said earlier, you can access our store at meninblazers.com. Vendapunk, Rog.
War pig!
Was that a Rabona?
I like snacks.
Balls win, balls win.
Can't say that anymore. Take that, Gloria.
Oh, balls lose?
Can't say that either. To tweet.
Abracado, rock on, mate.
Kung Fu Fight in America. Love you, David.
Love you, Rog.
Pray for Rog. Hey, Prime members. You can listen to Men in Blazers ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey. Do you want to hear about the $100 wedding dress that saved Abercrombie? Or which real tech acquisition is like Game of Thrones? Or the one financial equation that can finally solve climate change? Then check out the Daily News podcast, The Best One Yet. Every morning on The Best One Yet, hosts Nick and Jack serve up three of the most interesting business news stories and why you need to know them in just 20 minutes. So whether you want to kick off a conversation with your buddies, you're going for that promotion at work, or you just want to know trends before your friends, be in the know this year by starting your morning with The Best One Yet every weekday. Follow The Best One Yet on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free right now on Wondery Plus. And for more deep dive and daily business content, listen on Wondery, the destination for business podcasts with shows like The Best One Yet, How I Built This, Business Wars, and many, many more. Wondery, means business.